Hi everyone, my name is Busisiwe Tlajwayo. I am a career coach and founder of Black Women in the Workplace. Black Women in the Workplace is a company that is aimed at helping Black women position themselves for leadership positions, navigate race and gender bias in the workplace, and to be effective in leadership positions. In today's video, I want to take a look at court proceedings that happened in South Africa with the leader of the EFF and AfriForum. So EFF is a political organization in South Africa that is considered leftist. So it's being led by a young man called, not so young anymore anyway, Julius Malema. And AfriForum is a civil organization that is taking care of the interest of white people who subscribe to it in South Africa. They are mostly around African speaking white people and farmers and all that, but they are there to manage the interest of that, and they do a lot of court cases, civil court cases, to support the people that they represent, which is mainly white Afrikaner speaking people. So they took Julius Malema to court, accusing him of inciting violence, because his party was singing the song Dubulibhunu, and Dubulibhunu is Zulu for shoot the Boer. This is a song that used to be sung during the apartheid era in protests against the apartheid that time. And the EFF supporters were singing it. And there's also some speeches where Malema had said that he is not calling black people to kill yet, to take up arms yet. So there is that whole hate speech thing around his pronouncements. So they took him to court, and I was watching his last proceedings, and there's so many demonstration of some of the things that I talk about in this channel around white centering, white fragility, anti-blackness, and white supremacy that really came out of those proceedings. So you can search up for them. They're on YouTube, Julius Malema's trial. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about was the denial of the history that we came from and its impact in the present. So the lawyer that was talking to Julius Malema, the lawyer that was questioning Julius Malema, one of the things that came out was how ignorant he was, how his lack of understanding of historical issues, systemic issues, was coming out in the interview. And some people were excited that Judith Malema gave that lawyer a lesson in the history of South Africa and white supremacy. But I wasn't. I felt that his ignorance actually rendered the whole thing frustrating, and actually was effective, because, for an example, he kept asking, so if someone, are you saying all white people have privilege? If someone who is white just came into South Africa last year, after 1994, are you saying they have privilege? He didn't even understand the issues of restitution, the issues of historical privilege that came from whiteness with white people. And there was like a complete denial of what happened pre-1994. He was on, there is a constitution in the country that is protecting everyone, whether you're black and white, and the complete denial of the history that we come from and the privilege that white people that white people have. And that also speaks to what is always being said about the fact that white people around white fragility, that the writer of the book on white fragility was talking about in that, sorry, I keep forgetting her name, but she was talking about the fact that white people don't have to learn about racism because they don't, it doesn't impact them. It's easy for them to be ignorant about issues of racism because it doesn't impact them. But how harmful that is that when, as a black person, you are faced with racism from white people, it's difficult to explain what they have just done because they don't have the context. And I believe that that is very effective to ensure that the race conversation stays unspoken about. And then the lawyer was talking about there's a book, but the lawyer was talking about the fact that there are a lot of white killings. So there is a book by Roots who writes about white farm killings, and most of the farmers, because black people were dispossessed of agricultural land, are white people. And not to say that all of the white people that are farmers have gotten their land because of dispossession, but some of them, and many of them are. And the land question is still a very big question in South Africa. Land restitution is still a big question in South Africa. But there was a spate of white killings of killings of farmers, and Julius Malema kept saying that's criminality. And also, I think, if you're in a country that is dispossessed and there's not enough that is done around around reposition and restitution, you should expect such types of violence. But what has been happening is that this issue of farm murders has been touted as a huge issue, and which creates this idea that white people are being killed in droves in South Africa, white people are being culled, the white race is being culled, farm murders are happening and white people are dying. Whereas South Africa, yes, farm murders are happening, but South Africa has a very high rate of crime. And part of that is because of inequality. And people, black people in townships, black people where they're staying are experiencing a high level of crime. And they're experiencing a high level of crime and not enough how they feel response from the police in South Africa. So to position the issue of farm murders as if those are the only people that are dying in South Africa, when there's so many people who are dying. There's a high level of gender-based violence, for an example. There's a high murder rate in South Africa. And not to say that that issue of farm murders is not important, but it's been touted as this thing that is happening against white people. And so the lawyer kept saying that the when oh, so he was talking about the trauma of the people that were killed, of the farm murderers that were killed, how gruesome the murder was. And he kept saying the real trauma, you know, the real trauma. So centering white trauma as more important than black trauma. And Malema kept saying there is black trauma. Black people are still traumatized by all those years of apartheid. Black people are still living within the trauma of apartheid. Black people, especially, he was talking about the national anthem, which when it was decided in the times of Mandela around the government of national unity, the Rainbow Nation, it was decided that all these languages should be represented in the national anthem. And one of the songs that has been sang there is the stem. And the stem was a song that had been sung by the white police when they were killing black people. And he was talking about the trauma that every time that song is being sang, which is the national anthem, the trauma of the people who were part of the people that were tortured during that time is being raised. And this guy kept saying, but the real trauma of the farm, people who were killed in the farm, when every time that song Tubulit Bunu is sang, is more important. So placing it as more important. And that speaks to the centering of whiteness as more important than black lives, the centering of white trauma, of white feelings as more important than black lives. The fact that we're not having the race conversation in South Africa is also the centering of the comfortability of white people, for their discomfort in not talking in talking about race and ensuring that that stays protected. Yeah, so the refusal of seeing systemic, the other issue that came out was the refusal of seeing systemic issues and the insistence of seeing white people as individuals. Because he kept saying, so are you saying every white person? Are you saying white person? So that's this refusal to see systemic issues, this refusal to seeing the collective privilege that white people got because of the history of South Africa, because of the history of domination, really was palpable throughout the interview. And then the whole, also what came out as well was the white fragility. So calling out any discussions of race and racism and race issues as hate speech, divisiveness came out a lot in that interview. The evoking of white fragility when we talk about these issues, the insistence that because 1994 happened and there was a Rainbow Nation and there was a government of national unity, anything that happened after before then cannot be talked about. We are now all equal. The refusal to see the inequalities in the country and the refusal to acknowledge that the issue of racism is hegemonic. It's not just people's behavior. It's the way people think, the way people have been conditioned to see black people as inferior, and how that shows up in their behavior. And this whole idea as well that when people do not harm you physically, what they think does not come through. And the whole idea of And white people love this whole thing around intentionality. If I did not intend to harm you, then you're not harmed. But they're thinking that because you're not intending to harm people, you're not being harmful, is very naive. And it's very helpful to keep the white supremacy in place, because I can say I did not intend to harm you and that's okay, but not recognizing the impact of the harm that you are making to black people. And because black lives do not matter, because we center whiteness and its comfort, then it doesn't matter how it lands on you. It should be fine, because I did not intend to harm you. And if you're raising it, you are being divisive because you are making me uncomfortable, and I, as a white person, I'm the most important. Everything is centered around them. So I was spoken about the ignorance of white people of racism issues and how it places the burden on black people to now issue a whole dissertation of how you've been harmed by this person, because they don't understand how racism works. So you have to, having been harmed, have to now be able to articulate in a way that white people can understand that they have harmed you, is very problematic and ensures that white supremacy continues. And also the final thing is Nelson Mandela's legacy of reconciliation, which perpetuates The whole notion that we don't see color, that color left in 1994 when we decided to have a government of national unity, refusing to see how black people are still struggling, how inequality is so high in the country, and even how black people are seen and treated in these white places. So this whole idea that we should not see color, we should, he even quoted Martin Luther's quote where he said people should be judged by the content of their character and not how they look like. So using even the debate or the context of civil rights and the recognition of the rights of black people, to use that to entrench the privilege of whiteness. He was using the Constitution of South Africa, and that's what AfriForum uses a lot, the Constitution of South Africa, to further oppress black people and to further entrench whiteness. The reason why I do these posts is not to, I don't like talking about white people, I don't like talking about these issues, but I want black people to see ways that they continue being oppressed and to see ways that they might have been internalizing the oppression so that they can free their experience from actual racism, actual oppression that they are going through, so that they can de-internalize that and find their own worth and engage with these systems and with these places differently from a place of worth and not internalization of the inferiority that happens every day and it's hiding itself in these ways of seeing things. So if you like what you see, please like, share, and subscribe, and please please look at the links that we have on the videos in terms of how you can follow us and support us. I also want to introduce the 5-day Leave Your Soul Crushing Job Challenge, where I engage with these issues in terms of white, being a black woman in white places. If I even talk to complex issues around how we have been raised as girls, as black women, complex relationship with our support systems, and how that affect how we show up as women in the workplaces. I even speak to the mother wound and the father wound. I speak to how as black women we can reclaim our power and reclaim our identity and our agency, and I also speak to a career strategy. So that's a 5-day Leave Your Soul Crushing Job Challenge. The next one is happening from the 1st to the 5th of March, and the link is also in the comment. I hope to see you there. Thank you.